Today on Family Talk. Welcome to today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Jim Veldheis, and I'm here with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. Now, today we have a classic broadcast featuring a man who was a hero to many, and this is a great time to talk about college basketball because March Madness is at its most critical point right now. We'd like to introduce you to one of the winningest coaches ever in the history of college basketball, but more importantly, he remained a man of strong faith and character right up until the day he passed away. Doctor, I think some of our listeners already know who I'm talking about.
There's no doubt about it, Jim. We have chosen to broadcast today, as you said, a classic broadcast to coincide with March Madness, which is in the Final Four of its tournament. Right now, we're going to have a winner very shortly, and that gives us an opportunity to go back and talk to Coach John Wooden, maybe the finest basketball coach in the history of the game. I knew him. I had an opportunity to talk to him. We became good friends. He has gone on to be with the Lord. He died in his 90s, but before he passed, he came to do a broadcast with me. In fact, three of them. We're going to let our listeners hear two of those three broadcasts. We had an audience for those interviews. There were about 150 people in the audience. We kind of made a makeshift studio. And I'm telling you, that was a wonderful time with a good, good man. He loved the Lord. Then he's going to tell us about that today.
Well, you know, Doctor, the insights and stories that he shared, they really are timeless. And you don't have to just be a basketball fan to realize that. You never have to even have gone to a game. Like my wife, she would not know who John Wooden is. But when she hears about his faith as a man, that's going to capture her attention.
So, he won 10 NCAA championships in 12 years. I mean, that's success in basketball. But as he will tell us today, basketball was not his first love.
Well, he's got a lot of wisdom that we can all learn from. So let's pick up as you introduce this basketball legend on today's edition of Family Talk.
Well, I am so personally honored to have Coach John Wooden as our guest here today. I've admired this man greatly for many, many years. Even though we've already met, we've met on several occasions, but this is the first time that he's agreed to appear on our program. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
And you've been in my office on several occasions before, and I have admired you not only up close, but from a distance, except when you were at UCLA and I was at USC as a student and then as a faculty member. I resented you greatly during those days because you beat us every year. But I've learned to get over that, and I just want you to know that I love you anyway. Before we get into the meat of the program, I'm going to do something that I have never done this. But there's a reason why I want to do it. For the first time, I am going to read basically the entire biography of this man because I want our listeners to know who he is, what he's accomplished, and the incredible record that he's accumulated, not only in basketball, but in life. And so let me do that. We'll start with an unequaled record as a college coach. His teams at UCLA over a 27-year period won a record 10 national championships. No one has even come close to that, including 7 in a row, 38 consecutive NCAA tournament victories, 4 undefeated full seasons, an 88-game winning streak, and 19 Pac-10 championships. It's the league championship. Coach Wooden retired in 1975 after achieving an unmatched 40-year career winning percentage of over 800, making him one of the winningest coaches ever. But his basketball career started much, much younger, obviously. When he was in high school, he led the high school team to the Indiana State Championship in 1927. It's been a long time, Coach.
Yes, it has.
Two other years, his team was a runner-up, and three times Wooden was named on the All-State team. Then he went to Purdue University, and he played on two national championship teams, 1930, 1932. He was a three-time All-American there. 1932, he received the Helms Athletic Foundation College Basketball Player of the Year. In 2003, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. President George Bush presented Wooden with this highest civilian honor in the United States. In the year 2000, the NCAA and ESPN named him Coach of the Century. In 1999, Sports Illustrated named him the century's best college basketball coach. And he was named the NCAA Coach of the Year six times. Coach, when you look back on all those accomplishments, you know, you've heard interviewers go through that litany before, but it is an incredible list of accomplishments. What comes to mind when you think back on a career that reached such heights?
I think I've been very blessed about being able to be with a number of great people. I would have never had those basketball records unless I'd had great players under my supervision. And certainly, the individually as a player, I had some great teammates, and it's a good thing I had, and some some great coaches. I'm more proud of something like the academic award. I feel that I earned the other things; somebody else earned them for me.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on your team, played 4 years.
Yes, I learned much from him. I learned a lot about man's inhumanity to man from Kareem. He's an entirely different person. If you know him individually, that some people might think of him.
Well, some people think he's the best basketball player of all times, or one of them. Did you maintain a standard of discipline even through that anti-establishment era at UCLA?
Yes. I don't think that it was out of line at all, but I required certain things and I expect them to adhere to them. And I believe youngsters, if you do, they're within reason. You'll have no problem. They may test you, which is all right, but I think they'll go along with you. Little things that some they would laugh about. So it's not too bad.
Hey, let's go back to your childhood, because you've written a lot about the way you were raised. You were raised on a farm, a poor farm, during the Depression. Mm-hmm. Things were very tough. You all eventually lost the farm, didn't you?
Yes, we did, in the Depression.
And you did without a lot of things that today people feel like they have to have?
We didn't know we were doing without things, just accept things as they were. And it didn't seem, I mean, you look back on it, it seemed like it must have been very difficult. It was difficult for my mother. It was difficult for her with all the boys, and the washing with no electricity, and no running water, and things of that sort. It was difficult for my mother. We always had plenty to eat, and overalls were always well patched, and so everything was right.
The crops did not prosper. The animals died, and you had to move to the city.
Well, the city was 4,800 people. And but the gymnasium seated 5,200, and it was always full. And they were a little crazy there. But yes, the animals had been vaccinated and had some false bacteria. But my father never blamed anybody. It was his fault that he had it done. And I never heard my father ever blame anybody for anything.
Well, talk about him, because as I hear the things you've said about him, he reminds me somewhat of my father and what he meant to me. He had a great impact on you, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he did. He was a gentleman in many ways, physically strong. He tried to get across the idea to us that you should never try to be better than somebody else, because anything you'll ever know, you'll learn from somebody else in one way or another, and so you should always be learning from them. I never heard him speak an ill word of another person. My father was an admirable person.
He taught you to love two things, the Bible and poetry.
Yes, he read to us every night. And I remember he read a lot of poetry. I can still close my eyes and hear him reading by the shores of Gitche-Gumee, by the shining big sea waters, stood the wigwam of Nakoma, and so on and so on. About my graduation from grade school, you may have heard that he gave me two things. One was a poem, a verse by Reverend Henry Van Dyke. He said, four things a man must learn to do if he would make his life more true. To think without confusion clearly, to love his fellow man sincerely, to act from honest motives purely, to trust in God and heaven securely. And the other side was a seven-point creed, and he said, son, try to live up to this. And it was be true to yourself, help others, make friendship a fine art, drink deeply from good books, especially the Bible, make each day your masterpiece, build a shelter against a rainy day, and give thanks for your blessings, and play for guidance. He gave me that little card when I graduated from grade school in 1924, and I've carried that till it wore out. Something.
Coach, I don't think you would mind me telling people, because you've been very open with your age, but you're 93 years of age, and your father, beg pardon?
Only.
your father gave you that card and that poem, and you memorized it when you graduated from
grade school,
and it's with you today.
Surely.
Tell me that a parent does not have an impact on a child.
Well, parenting is the most important profession in the world. I believe that very, very definitely.
Well, I could have said it just about as well myself. I think that's what we live for here, is talking about marriage and parenthood and in the family. How long did he live?
He lived till he was 69.
You remember his loss?
Very well.
Was that a very difficult experience for you?
Of course. Yes, it is. When you lose anyone dear to you, of course it is.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah. Well, you had $908 in the bank.
And a nickel.
Mm-hmm. And the bank folded.
Mm-hmm.
And this was when you were just getting ready to get married to Nellie, is that right?
We were going to be married the next day. We're going to go to Indianapolis, 3 miles north of where we lived. And
that was your life savings?
Yes, I managed after my basketball season was over at Purdue. I played a little, barnstormed a little, and saved up a little money to get married. And we'd planned on this, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And one of Nellie's dearest friends called me and pushed an envelope, and he said, pay me back when you can. He gave me $200. That was very, very, very nice. So we drove to Indianapolis, was married. And the youngsters might get an idea. I mean, you might get a kick out of this. We were married, and my brother and his girlfriend, so she had a car. They drove us up there. Afterwards, we went to the theater, and we saw the Mills Brothers make their first appearance in Indianapolis. And I thought they were going to sing all night because Nellie and I were tired and we wanted to leave. But they're just...
I think I get it. She was the absolute love of your life, wasn't she?
Yes, she's the only girl I ever went with.
The only one you ever dated. Mm-hmm. And you were married to her for 53 years?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. 53 years. Mm-hmm. And you lost her in 1985.
I did.
How did she die?
She had leukemia and some other problems too.
But, I asked you how difficult it was for you to lose your father, and you said it was difficult. But I understand that you grieved for years over Nellie's loss.
Well, I never got over it, of course. I still remember. But my daughter and son and ex-players and minister and friends, they help you. And
would it be too personal if I mentioned what I read, that every year now, all these years later, on your anniversary, you write her a love letter?
Well, I write a note on the 21st of each month
Of each month?
Of each month.
Each month.
I lost her on the 21st of March, 1985, and that happened to be our daughter's birthday, too. And I'd write her a little note on the 21st of each.
And you've done that?
Since I lost her.
Since you lost her. Now, where are all those notes today?
Hidden.
Did you blame God when you lost Nellie?
No. No. You know, you accept things. What's best? She was out of pain. She suffered no pain. She was at peace. And she had suffered a long time. No, I didn't blame her.
Yeah. Tell us how you met Nellie. I think there's a story there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a bit of a story. But my freshman year in high school, I lived on this farm 8 miles north of this town, and commuted back and forth on an interurban. I saw her. I thought she was kind of cute, but I didn't think she saw me at all. But that summer,
you're a fox, is what you are.
that summer before we lost the farm, I was plowing corn in a field that was close to the little dirt road by me, and I was resting the mules that I was using, and a car drove up and stopped on the side of the road, and she got out, and her best friend and the brother of her best friend, who had a car, and they stopped and saw me and motioned me over, and I wouldn't go, and I kept shaking my head, and I wouldn't go, and they kept going. Well, finally they drove away. Well, when school started the next year, now we had moved into this little town, and first day of class, to go to head to an algebra class, and she's doing too, and her friend, and she said, stopped me and said, "Why didn't you come over and talk to her?" And I said, "I was shy. I was, you know, sweaty and dirty, and you had made fun of me." And she said, and I still remember, "I would never make fun of you." And I knew right then, this is one for me.
How old were you at that time?
14 or 15, 15, 14. I guess. 15.
And you fell in love and said, "That's the one for me." Was there ever in 53 years any regret for having married her? Was there ever a moment when you wish you hadn't?
Never. Never.
Can that kind of marriage still work,
of course,
Coach?
Of course.
What's required to make it work like that?
Listen, don't be disagreeable when you disagree, but the greatest and most important word of all is love. Love. It's the most important word. If it's there, it'll overcome all things.
Hmm. So you began life with almost nothing, no money. You were in debt when you married. Shortly after that, World War II came along, and you felt that you ought to join the Navy. What's the story there?
Well, I made a mistake in a way. I'm not talking with her. I enlisted without her knowing, and that's probably the worst disagreement we ever had. She didn't think I should, because I had the two children and was a teacher, and I might not have been drafted, but I just felt it was the thing to do, and I enlisted. But we got over that.
You were on what ship? Were you on any of the ships we would recognize?
No, I was blessed in many days. I was had orders to go to the USS Franklin, and on my way, I had got terribly sick. I didn't know what it was the matter, but I was on the plane. I knew I got terribly sick, and I had my appendix had burst, and I had an emergency. So they canceled my orders, and the fellow that replaced me on the Franklin was hit by a kamikaze and killed. And then I was sent for a training carrier, the USS Sable, for training on Lake Michigan, for training where pilots made their first landing. And one of the basketball players who had played for me at South Bend made his first landing on a carrier when I was serving as the captain of it at that particular time. And then near the end of the war, I got orders to go to the Belleau Wood. Yeah, which was in the, but Japan had surrendered. It was the South Pacific, and I wanted to get out. I didn't want to go to Japan and surrender. The war is over, and we're going to Tokyo. And the captain of the Sable, USS Sable, he managed to get connections to Washington, and I got out the next day. Went to the Glenview Naval Air Base out of Chicago and got out.
I understand you had another near-death experience, or at least one that could have taken your life.
Well, I suppose you think of the time when I was headed for Kemmel College at Buies Creek, North Carolina.
That's correct.
Where I went there for a basketball camp for several years in a row. And that's where Pete Maravich was coming when
yes.
he was a youngster. And
yeah.
Somebody came up at UCLA that I couldn't go on Saturday. And I normally went on Saturday, be there on Sunday, because I usually spoke at the chapel for all the youngsters that were there. And I couldn't go. And so I had my ticket changed to the next day. And the plane that I had the ticket for on Saturday crashed. Everybody was killed. So I don't know whether that's close or not. But
yeah. The Lord was obviously looking out for you. He had something he wanted you to do, Coach.
Apparently so.
And you have felt that divine ordination on your life, haven't you?
I think so. I think so. I think there's more than just what we see. There's something deeper than that. And I don't know what it is, and I hope it's pleasing to him.
You mentioned Pete Maravich. The day that he died, I don't know if you know that he died in my arms.
I knew that.
The day that he died, I set up that little pickup game, just a bunch of duffers, and then here comes this superstar of all times, Pete Maravich, and I knew that we had to get somebody to guard him because I sure wasn't going to do it. And Ralph Drollinger mm-hmm. came to play with us that day, so he and I wound up giving CPR to Pete. Now, Ralph played with you.
Yes, he did.
He was a center for
yes,
you
indeed.
During one of those mm-hmm. one of those games.
In the last championship game in 1975. Played wonderful for us in that game.
Well, you had that wonderful basketball career that ended in 1975. And I would think that it would have been pretty difficult to walk away from something that intense and that rewarding and that successful. How hard was it to retire and move on?
It wasn't difficult at all.
Really?
For some reason, it was the time. I decided on the spur of the moment, and I thought if anybody had asked me even 10 minutes before, I would have said, oh, I'll teach for 2 more years, maybe 3, but certainly not over 3. And then suddenly, just like that, I decided it's time, and I've never regretted it. I've missed practices. I love to teach. I love to plan my daily practices. I love to conduct them. But I don't miss the games, I don't miss the tournaments, I don't miss the falderals, and I don't miss trying to explain to the media what happened and so on. And the only thing I miss at all was the practices. That's where you get to learn your players, learn about them, where you establish rapport and relationships that last forever.
Coach, thank you for being our guest. Thank you for the man you are. Thank you for the influence that you've had on several generations of Americans. Thank you for your impact on athletics, and thank you for your love for Jesus Christ, and thank you for being my friend. It's been a pleasure having you here.
I've enjoyed it.
What a privilege to honor the life of the late John Wooden on today's edition of Family Talk. He was a great coach and an even greater man. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of our program, you mentioned some of his major accomplishments and honors. I would have taken the entire program to try to get to them all, and the list grew even after we recorded that broadcast a few years ago. In 2006, Coach Wooden was recognized for his impact on college basketball as a member of the founding class of the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame. And then in 2009, he was named by the Sporting News as the greatest coach of all time. The respect and the love that those in and outside the sports world have for him was a testament to his character and, I believe, his faith in Jesus Christ. He went to be with the Lord in 2010 at the age of 99. and we're looking forward to seeing him again one of these days. There's so much more to this conversation, and our listeners are going to want to be with us next time because we're going to hear more of our conversation and even have an opportunity to learn a little bit more about Coach Wooden's leadership training course that's still available. So as you can see, Doctor, he's still having an impact years after he's gone. What a testimony. If any of our listeners are basketball fans or know someone that might want to hear this broadcast, they can call us at 877-732-6825 for a CD, or you can download the broadcast from our website, drjamesdobson.org. We've also included a link to the poems that meant so much to Coach Wooden. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow to hear the second part of this interview with the late Coach John Wooden on the next edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.